Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is up, everybody? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. If you have not yet, please make sure you go to iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. Also, please make sure you're following the Instagrams at the Barry and Mac Show, at Dame That Dude, and mine is at B Wise Fitness. That's at B-W-I-S-E Fitness. We can't tell you enough how awesome it's been to bring you all this show. Today we get to talk about NIL. Hope you all enjoy. Get to go into something that is a hot topic of conversation in college football these days. Might be, according to a lot of fans, the most important topic. And we're going to get it from your perspective as both being a player, also having been a coach in high school, being around these athletes who are going through this, knowing the coaches, just what the NIL situation in college football today, like what's going on with it? What does its future look like? And what needs to be done to kind of button up the loose ends, figure out how to streamline this process a little better? First of all, just kind of how we got here. For the longest time, the NCAA athletes were not compensated for their likeness. I've always thought and argued that that was not good, right? You sell a number 13 jersey back in, you know, 99, 2000. Everyone knows that that's Damian Mackey's football jersey. You're using his performance on the field, that's on television, on ESPN, on Fox. What he does in that game is attributing to the sale of that product. Right. So you are a valuable commodity for that school. And there's arguments on, you know, what a scholarship is worth. And I totally get that. But in no other business or industry would that way of doing things be permitted. So sort of Mackey, what was, looking back sort of pre-NIL, did you all see something like this coming at a certain point? And what was it like sort of managing things at that time without something like this? Like, well, what was, you know, you don't have to, you know, the don't get fired or don't get shut down topics, but like kind of give us a little insight on how we should look at this.
Yeah, so pre-NIL, obviously there was the whole lawsuit against the NCAA football game on PlayStation, and guys got compensated by that. And I think that kind of set a precedent where guys started realizing, wait a minute, right, there's millions and millions. I mean, that game was a game we all love to be a part of. And like even in the game, right, I'll never forget my freshman year, they had 99, and I was at like, my overall was like an 81, and I was kind of pissed, but I was a freshman. And they have my number. They have my right position. It was a black guy, right? So I'm like, okay, that's me. Mm. But this game is making, like, everybody got the game. And then in 2000, I switched positions. They literally switched my position. They had more colors of brown. So my brown got lighter. Like I was a caramel, not just like the basic brown guy. And so I think the whole experience going through that deal and guys were rationalizing like, yo, that's literally me. And it's the Oklahoma Sooners, and they're running my, you know, I'm playing the position, but they are not allowing me to be me so that they don't have to pay me. So that whole phenomenon, I think, is what opened up the can of worms, Pandora's box, if you will. And then the second piece, Barry, is, listen, it's been 25 years. God dang, it's been 25 years since I recruited. You see things in recruiting. You know what I'm saying? You know what's going on behind closed doors. Listen, guys, I've seen $1,000 handshakes. I've seen guys' whole cars get retrofitted. Like, by the way, I don't imply that I'm saying this happened at Oklahoma. So just for the record, like I've seen a lot of stuff. A lot of my friends went to a bunch of different schools, and the fact of the matter is everyone knew it was a very bad secret that people were paying thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to get these guys to come play for their respective schools. And then Barry, the last piece is the portal, right? The portal made free agency. And you now have you know, independent freedom. But listen, when I was at OU, you heard Mark say it like, man, I want to go home. I want to quit. I got to tell you, if there was a portal when I was at OU, like, I don't know if I was mature enough to deal with some of the adversity that we dealt with and not just have a free get out of jail free pass like these kids today have. So I respect that space. I would like to think that I was tough enough to not punk out and love my team enough to not punk out. But when you're talking about thousands of dollars and life-changing income and the ability to create legacy and handle immediate concerns and financial issues in your family today, it's a lot. It's a lot for these young men to process and their families to process. And so it's a very, man, this is a complicated, layered deal that we need to pay very close attention to. And I'll kind of get my perspective on the how. But the what is really right. What matters at this point in time, because it used to be you wanted to go to an OU or Bama or whatever. Like in my day, University of Miami, those schools you knew in 3 to 5 years, you had a higher potential to go to the league. And everyone wanted to go to the league to make real life-changing income, right? Very half the guys go to the league because they love the game. It's just not true. It's about half. The other half want to get paid and be famous. So Neil took that timeline and reduced it. Some of these guys are freaking seniors in high school getting seven figures. That is something as institutions and schools, universities, they have to recognize and understand that it's not illegal. It is a part of the game. It is what for years people fought tongue in cheek saying, hey, if a kid can go be a skier and get sponsorship and thousands of dollars and plane tickets paid for and all this stuff to travel the world and ski, well, then these kids playing football, basketball, whatever the sport that we're playing scholastically, they need to also be afforded that opportunity. Well, skiing is a multi-billion dollar conglomerate like college football is. And, you know, a lot of these guys want a clout chasing. They've got the money. It's expendable. They want to say, I'm the number one donor at, you know, an Oregon or a Miami who has all these ridiculous, you know, the Rashada kid got $9 million, you know, reportedly, who knows if that's what he really got. But
sure.
That whole part is a piece of it. But the other part of it is at the end of the day, some of these kids, like Baker Mayfield, how much money did the University of Oklahoma make off Baker Mayfield?
Oh my gosh.
I love my university, right? But like, let's call a spade a spade. Is it eight figures? Is it nine figures? Like, how much is it?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's, right? It's a lot. Like,
and then if you take Baker and you make him, Baker is a coder. So he's not playing football, but he's a coder and he lives in Santa Clara, California, and he has a unique skill at the age of 17 to produce code that whatever that finances some problem. He creates a solution to it. Baker's getting a $30 million signing bonus from Google or from McAfee or from whatever. Like, those companies are shelling out that money because he has a unique skill set and it's a $1 billion industry, multi. Well, same thing applies to football. So just before we get into the how and some of the stuff, I just want to make sure we kind of like just shuffle through that part. There are already guys giving away. I never seen a person get a car. I heard rumors about cars in the 80s and stuff like that. I never saw a guy get a car. What I did see is many guys get access to cars. I saw many guys get access to wheels and paint jobs and custom stuff. I saw thousands and thousands and thousands of cash. I saw thousands, very thousands.
Oof.
Yeah. Plane tickets, all that stuff is already happening. So to legitimize it, I think there's some, right, you don't want to see guys thrown away because they are afforded an opportunity and, you know, because the rules say it's bad, they partake and then boom, they're kicked out or suspended or expelled even from playing. And you want guys to be able to capitalize or maximize their earning potential. So I get that part. Here's my thing with Neil. We know. Can we both agree the NCAA has essentially disarmed itself to the point where they are shooting a water gun at militiamen?
Yeah, 100%.
They literally, right? Unless you self-govern and telling yourself they're not going to do anything. So that's that part.
Yeah.
And then you got the schools where, you know, imagine Neil 8 years ago with good old Boone Pickens. Can you imagine what OSU would be today if he was alive for Neil?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oof. Like, think about it. Legitimate, like, bro, he'd be dropping millions to get whoever he, like, who knows what OSU, shout out to the Cowboys for always missing a great opportunity. That's just, you know, that's just how they
I mean, he'd be doing like, what Miami's doing. He would be 100%. Doing that. They would be that on, I mean, on a probably a different level. I mean, I don't know if people outside of Oklahoma realize the amount of money that he had.
I would be willing to bet this would be an opportunity for him to upstage Knight and the Miami crew. Knight in Oregon and the Miami crew. I would be Boone Pickens sunk million. He essentially created a new stadium because their stadium, everybody would say it looked like a roller coaster track. You know, like, you know, like he literally took personal offense to that. Like, I believe he would have said, I am going to be the face of investing in Neil. That's what I believe. I believe he'd want to one up Miami. He'd want to one up Phil Knight and the guys in Oregon and all the other SEC groups, the A&M group, the Texas group, whatever. I think Boone would say, ha, hold my beer. This is my opportunity to show everybody I can spend the most of my college, because he was that maniacal about OSU. But I think Neil, in its heart of hearts, I think there's a space where it's needed. These kids for years, I was included, Roy was included. There were times where, I mean, we just didn't have it, bro. We had a meal plan, and so we weren't going to go hungry, and we had electricity, so we were not going to freeze or die of heat exhaustion in summer or winter. But man, I remember many summers where we just didn't have it. Like, we had to go to the homie's house or you know, do what we had to do to make ends meet. Or, you know, there were winters where we had Thanksgiving break because we didn't make a bowl game our freshman year. We just couldn't go home. We just couldn't afford to go home, and our parents couldn't afford to send for us home. So part of that is merited. And then, of course, just, I would even say from my era to the Mark Clayton and those guys era, the mid 2000s to the AD era of the later 2000s to today, how much has the sport, you know, gone up in marketability and money.
The money. I mean, oh yeah.
It's 10X, 20X, right? It's probably 20 times more than my era, easy. And I'd say it's probably 10X Mark in 80s era, even when it really started to explode. And so where does all that money go? So the idea that I like is, if it were up to me, Barry, and I'm really interested to hear your take next. I think we should take away the student athlete moniker, the title, right? Like, let's keep it a buck. How many four and five stars stay in college long enough to actually get their degree? I'd be interested to see what that percentage or that data number is. How many of the starters at the NFL caliber starters actually stick around and get a degree? These guys are not going to Bama, going to Ohio State, going to the University of Oklahoma, right? They're not going to these respective schools to get a degree in business management like I did. They're just not. Yeah. These guys are picking these schools because they want an opportunity to access marketability while in college, to build a brand and platform while in college, and then get to the NFL and be famous and filthy rich. And by the way, it's not a bad business model if you have the unique talent to pull it off. It's a phenomenal business model. So you take away student athlete and you create like a union. And I think there's, you know, I don't know how they do profit sharing, but gosh dang it, that's got to be in the equation. And you know, you are paid based upon your merit, because you can't just say every kid gets 10K. Well, that's not fair.
No.
The stud gets 10K, and the lazy ass who barely, you know, just does just enough to not get cut, right? Then you can't continue down the road we're on. And I guess you can, but then, you know, you got all these false narratives like A&M is not a championship caliber team. And by the way, they're going to prove it on the field this year. A&M is just there. They are a farce. They're a facade. I'm 100% certain that A&M is going to find a way to goof it up, because you are who you are. I don't care if you got the best class in a million years last year. They're going to screw that up.
Agreed. I said something the other day. Somebody was bringing up just, man, look, A&M is going to be such a problem. And I'm like, man, bringing a bunch of five-star talent Like that's not what wins you games. Like if you don't have a culture and a system first, you are not going to just bring guys in and win. If you want to say that, then OU should have won. Offensively, OU should have been better. So why didn't that pan out? So those stars are, they mean something, obviously, but they don't mean everything.
It's the ingredients. It's the culture. Like first things first, it's the culture. Listen, we talked about it last time. There's five plays that make a game. And you watch football, and hopefully somebody's going to hold me accountable to that, and you'll be able to be able to digest. Like five plays make the difference. If your culture is me, if your culture is it's about, you know, my, if your culture is, you know, what is it going to do to get I so that I can get to the next, I'm just telling you that backside X is not going to run the deep post, which makes the safety stay deep so that the play drawn up is for the Y or the tight end to run an ugly dig across the formation. The X isn't going to run it. And when he doesn't run it, the safety doesn't have to respect it. And when he doesn't have to respect it, the safety is going to drive on the ugly dig because he's going to see it coming and boom, the safety is going to pick it. Like that's the part of the game where it has to matter. That's why people making fun of the soul mission that BV, like, let me tell you, man, there's legs to that. We're going to be able to see, by the way, Barry, we're going to see dividends this season. We're going to see a play that reminded us of a play under Link and be like, man, I remember that Kansas play where the backer didn't scrape or the backside corner didn't take the backside angle and it turned into a long run. And then boom, that play is going to be the difference between a squeaker where we win by three to a first half play that they break on us, but we stop them and then we get a three and out and it kills all the momentum and then we score and then we stop them and then we score and then it's a rout. Like that's how minute the plays are. Like that's how small it is. One small play. The guy gets he catches a hitch. Our corner falls, but that backside corner stops him at the 3-yard line. Our defense bows up. Boom. We stop them. They don't go for a field goal. Boom. We stop them again. We go score. We stop them and score. The game's over. But that backside corner doesn't run that backside angle. That guy make our corner slips and lost his confidence, by the way. No one had his back, so the defense lost his confidence, by the way. They score a touchdown. Now they've gained confidence, by the way, and now we're going back on offense with a little less confidence. Holy shit, this might be a game. Now if they stop us, boom, now they have all the momentum. That's football. And A&M's going to play a Mississippi State. They're going to play a Florida. They're going to play a Tennessee. They're going to play a Bama. They're going to play an Auburn, where those guys don't give a damn if you had 7 5-star linemen, whatever the hell they had. Like, you can't play all of them at once. The 11 guys in that line better want it more than 11 guys across the line for us. And that's what it's going to boil down to. And they don't have that culture. They just don't. They don't have
it. Yeah. It's, as you said, just because you have those guys, they're not all playing at the same time. And at the end, we know the rate at which some of them pan out, don't pan out. Development is such a major part of the game, right? When you're a 5-star, you're just saying that you have some polish to your game, or you are just the elite of the elite athletically. And sometimes it's a combination of both, but it doesn't mean as much as I guess as it's being made out to be. And here's kind of one of the pieces I wanted to ask you about with the NIL. Right now, what you're seeing is the thing that you started to see in the NBA. You see it now in the NFL, but in the NBA, Michael Jordan has talked about this in interviews. He said now players get paid off of potential, right? Not what you are, but what you could be. And you're seeing this at the high school level with guys going into college. What is this? And this is the argument I also have to oppose people who are like, this is never going to change. A&M is just going to win a bunch of championships. What's going to happen when this A&M team goes out there, let's say this year, and they do a 7-5, an 8-4, right? What kind of accountability now that not just little money, real money is being given to these players First of all, I think you're going to see some of that if they go out there, God forbid, they're 500. Like, you're going to start to see some of that money dry up, or things get a little bit tighter. Because say what you want about wealthy people and what they're willing to put their money into, they're also willing to pull that money out, right? They got that money for a reason. They're choosing you because they foresee it being a wise investment for whatever reason, whether it's an investment in their school, an investment in you for the future, with whatever partnership you're agreeing to, right? That money can dry up just as quick. What do you think about the accountability aspect of that now that was not there before? But before, you're accountable to the coach, to your players, to the university, not to so-and-so donor, so-and-so business owner. Do you think that's a real thing?
100%. Couple of things. One, you get paid to play, you can get scrutinized. So it's going to be a whole nother level of scrutiny that players, I don't think they're going to like on social media. I don't think players are going to like on actual the media. Like, there's just a certain way that, let's just use Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith tells the truth about pro athletes because they make millions of dollars. You won't hear Stephen A. Smith, you know, talk terrible about a college kid who dropped the ball or had a bad week. That's going to change. You got quarterbacks making $9 million. You're going to be judged on, you know, you're getting paid to play. So park that one. Number two is I'm Johnny Football. You see what I did there? I'm Johnny Football. I'm Johnny Football, and I just played for an ABC team, and I just got paid $1 million, and we lost. Guess what? Well, I kind of don't care because I got paid $1 million. But then you got Bobby Blue Collar on the same team, and Bobby Blue Collar is playing because he loves the sport, and he knows that he needs this team to have a winning season for him to have a chance to make it to the Senior Bowl or whatever. So now you're in a position where the you know, there's no I in team community, where there kind of is an I in paid. There is one, right? Like, I got paid. Yeah. There's an eye in that, bro. Like, I'm in a position where, win or lose, guess what? My family's good. Remember, I said it, 50%, I'd say, play the game for love of the game. The other 50% is trying to make money. And if they're making the money in college, I see a huge potential windfall of guys who genuinely are apathetic to what's happening over and beyond, especially if they're getting paid right at their freshman year. Here you are. You hear Mark Clayton talking about he's going to quit because he can't do the workouts. But you got kids who are essentially being promised millions before they've ever even met the strength coach. So that part's going to be interesting. And then you spoke about it. Listen, man, billionaires and multimillionaires don't become billionaires and multimillionaires by making uninformed investments. They do it by making very astute, educated, wise moves with their money. They're not going to consistently do so if the return on investment isn't well. Furthermore, give a 20-year-old kid 50 grand and watch him do immature things and watch him blow it on things that he promised he wouldn't or said that he couldn't or whatever. You're going to be pretty pissed off, right? Hey, this $50,000 is contingent upon this, 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 and this. And a 21-year-old kid takes their $50,000 and buys a Corvette for 44 grand. And what can you do now? I mean, the money's spent. You're not getting it back. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, and I think these are questions OU's asking behind the scenes. I think these are things that the Castiglione's and the BVs and the athletic department are concerned about before they just go, let's just let the families figure it out. And here's the other part. And, you know, check this out. I got asked, and I guess I could say this. I got asked by, so I'm in the insurance agency. You know, that's one of my businesses. And obviously people are hearing about a product called an IUL. It's an index universal life insurance policy that has cash accumulation and it has some built-in protections. So there's a nil conglomerate. I can't say the school. I can't. But they actually want me to come and speak to the families because the families are already having questions about tax implications. About, there are families that are saying, okay, maybe we don't get $1 million, but let's just say we get the 50. I think OU is going to get 50 grand every kid, which I think is super solid, right?
Yeah.
If my son gets $50,000 a year, where's the best place for me to put this money so that it can do ABC for me down the road? My family. So now they're getting smart and making decisions around the money. And they're, you know, they're going to be like Rashada's family. What if he gets $9 million And what if they spend $7 million and he's in Florida? Florida's a good school, a state to be in tax wise.
Yeah.
But let's just say he was in Cali and he spent 90% of the money and didn't consider the tax implications. Like, what happens to that family? What happens to the kid? Uncle Sam ain't playing with that. So lots to unpack, lots of different layers to really consider. I think in 5 years, I hate to use the word regulation, because regulation to me sounds like, you know what I'm saying? It sounds like suspension or something, or I don't know. It sounds like detention. But I think there's going to be enough framework around the NIL policies and how it's going to work, that hopefully there are programs in place to when you agree to NIL, right? You form an LLC. Now you are a business entity, and now you're able to access some write-offs, and maybe your parents are employees, and right, they come in to see you as a part of functioning your business. So, you know, there's a lot that you can unpack with this deal, and things that are, you know, again, questions that are coming across my desk. It's just interesting that this is kind of like in the field that I work in.
Yeah.
But Barry, I can't with a straight face say in some capacity the kids don't deserve to get paid, while in the same space say, dude, you get paid, you got to be a grown ass man and deal with the consequences. That's really my take on that space. Interesting to know what are a couple of thoughts that you're thinking about?
So I think the reason that people are I won't use the word upset, but I feel like I've said this before. I feel like the spirit of the thing is missing, right? When people first viewed NIL, and this is where the NCAA just completely missed the mark by not handling this, 15 years ago? Like when the video game started making a boatload of money. I mean, gosh, probably 22 years ago. I mean, they were having success with that thing very early. But not setting a framework early on, even if you're going to set it around that student athlete model. You know, for the longest time, they talked about, you know, putting together trusts for the kids, doing just various different things that the NCAA just drug their feet on. I think they just wanted to put it off and put it off and put it off until it just finally became a thing. And it ended up becoming a thing in the court system. And now there's nothing they can do about it. However, I think people's frustration is that the general idea was that their favorite players, their recruits, were still going to come to OU or come to Tulsa or come to wherever it is that they're going to go play football and get an education. And the cherry on top would be, you know what, we are going to give you some money for your jersey. We're going to let you go when we do our events for spring and for fall. You're going to get money to sign an autograph. You're going to get, you know, Reggie Bush, who did the stuff he did, your Maurice Clarets, right? Things like that, not going to be a big deal anymore. If you want to be a spokesperson for, you know, so-and-so car dealership, right? See 2005 Rhett Bomar. It wasn't quite the situation, but you know what I mean, right? If you want to be involved with businesses, especially here at the local level, you're going to have an opportunity to do that. And we're not going to push back, right? And I feel like had the NCAA made a framework for that 20 years ago, you would have seen the system evolve. There would have been people even then, right? The whole give an inch, take a mile. There would have been people that had pushback against something like that, right? The traditionalists, you can argue what their views are on other stuff, but they would have pushed back. But I think it didn't win, so it's hard to say it would have won. But I like to think of a world of NIL where the spirit of the game, and this is sort of, I personally have some different thoughts on it, but this is where I think people's frustration is that the whole spirit of what it was initially about is lost, right? It's not, right now it is basically how much money can we pool together to buy the best recruiting class that we can possibly get, right? It's not about, you know, destroying it at UCF, making a YouTube channel, and he makes a little bit of money on it and that gets pulled, right? Or if Michael Turk did that at the same time, his channel is very successful.
the NCAA missed the mark by not handling business right then. I want to ask you something. So looking 5 years down the line, right? So this past week and a half, we've gotten all the news of conference realignment. Things are shifting so much, right? I just saw yesterday that I guess the Big 12 is looking to add up to 10 schools from the Pac-10. So just who knows how that's going to look. But 5 years from now, right, you're looking in your crystal ball. What is more likely? That the NCAA steps in whatever capacity and helps tidy up the way this is done, maybe puts some type of framework or structure around how schools have to operate with NIL, or do the conferences, the commissioners of the conferences and the athletic directors and the presidents, do they kind of circumvent the whole thing and the NCAA, but particularly in college football? Because for people who don't know, the college football playoff is not put on. It is the only sport where the NCAA, although it is a sanctioned NCAA sport, the NCAA does not do the quote unquote tournament, right? So they're already not really a part of that. They are, but they aren't. My question is, what is more likely? The NCAA throws some structure around this, is able to get things tidied up, or are we looking at something altogether different with a unionized sport of college football where the sport is really just run by the commissioners of the conferences?
Yeah, I think there's a 1% chance the NCAA intercedes, and here's why. Litigation. They will have the consequence of dealing with being sued. And obviously this thing has gone up through Congress. The NCAA doesn't want any part of that. They're making money hand over fist with even with the current makeup of what's happening. The NCAA is getting paid, and they know, by the way, they owe me money. The lawsuit against the NCAA from about 12 years ago, they need to freaking pay me. That's another conversation. That's the conversation for another day. But anyway, no, I think you're more likely to see the commissioners, the conferences. I think you're seeing the players emerge with the SEC, the Big 12, and the SEC, the Big 10, and then potentially the Big 12. How about those guys, man? I think with the new leadership, they got the Rock Nation guy. I don't know if he's in or not, but they're clearly moving in a different direction, which 5 years too late to keep us. I think 5 years ago, we don't want to leave the Big 12 because we were, you know, not 5 years ago, but 20 years ago, the Big 12 was the best conference in college football.
Yeah.
So I think we're in a space, Barry, where the NCAA stays out of it. They're going to collect a check as long as they can. And until they are, you know, no longer a valued component of college football. But the conferences are going to say, y'all got me all the way messed up. If you think we're going to let the leftovers of the Pac-10 of the world and the small potatoes of the ACC of the world be in the same conversation with the SEC and the Big Ten after these guys make this full-fledged switch. And what it could mean is, you know, there's 30 teams vying for a D1 championship versus 125 or whatever the number one the number has been the last 100 years. And I mean, here's the part where it's like, dang, nostalgia versus economics. If you're a kid and you're good enough to go to a Nevada or Montana State, but you're not good enough to go to an OU or Texas, it's kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it is what it is. And plus with the portal, let's say you overplay yourself and you're actually a stud. Well, you can portal up, you know, the next year and be given an opportunity to do better. So it's kind of taking on a life of its own. I firmly believe, B, that in order for us to get structure and control around it, it's going to require the conferences to say, hey, man, we're not going to let, the redhead stepbrother A&M think they eating at the big kids table because they got a resource of an abundance of alumni who are willing to fork over millions of bucks. I think the Bamas, the OUs, the Ohio States, you know, the blue bloods of yesteryear are not going to say, well, let's just let people buy their credibility, and they're going to step in. Yeah. They're going to step in. I believe in the next 5 years, there will be some, again, I don't want to use, I like the word framework better. There will be some framework around what's legit, what's not legit, what's enforceable, what's not enforceable. And I think it's a penalty the universities will pay. See, that it can't be a coach penalty or a player penalty. What needs to happen is the universities need to suffer the consequences for just turning a blind eye to saying, oh, we didn't know. And I don't know how you enforce that. It's not my job. They don't pay me to do it. But that's something that I would hope they consider heavily when thinking about how to, you know, move forward and proceed with what football will look like in the next 5 years.
So I think my follow-up to that would be, are people just going to totally need to rethink their, let's say their alma mater, like you said, is Montana State, or pick a school like Indiana, who in basketball is great, but in football, maybe there's you know, a lot there that's they're just not very good, right? Do people need to, are people just going to have to accept that their school, whether it's because of the alumni space, the donors, the economy around the program in that local area, you know, some schools, even some of the bigger schools, are at a distinct disadvantage. Are we just going to move in a direction where those schools accept that disadvantage, know they're not going to be able to compete, and then just totally go a different route? Like, is there, I guess what I'm really getting at is there a rule or a framework that you could set up hypothetically that evens that playing field? Like, is it a salary cap, right? Or is it some type of, you know, what is the move for people who are going to think that the University of Tulsa is not going to have an opportunity at all to get, you know, the every other year, maybe they might get like 1 4-star, 5-star guy who's just wants to stay local, or whatever the case may be, right? Those are going to be fewer and more far between because of the money that's being thrown around. And those guys are important to a university like that. Is there a model or something that you do besides a salary cap that helps keep those other schools competitive?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. Here's what I do know. There are kids who 5 years ago were like, you know, enrollment in football was way down. Concussions, all this conversation. Well, I'd be willing to bet more parents are going to be willing to let their kids play football now because it's an opportunity for them to, you know, take care of the family, 18, 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So there's, again, I think it's a convoluted space. Obviously, safety is still an issue, but then the game is kind of watered down, right? Like the game that's played today isn't the game I played 20 years ago, not even close. In fact, I don't even get injured. If I play today's game, I don't have the injury I have, but I digress. How many championships is Tulsa going to win in today's landscape, or 10 years ago's landscape, or 20 years? How many championships is Montana? My point is, if you go to Montana, I don't think you're going to Montana with the hope of winning a national championship of football. If you go to Reno, I don't think you're going to Reno with the dream of playing against Alabama for the championship. Right now, you go to OU, different story. So those guys, it's kind of a dose of reality. And to take off the kiddie gloves and just keep it a buck, like, there's probably 3 teams in the Big 12 as it's currently, you know, the makeup of it, that can legit talk national championship. Legit. Right? OU, Texas, I don't even know who number 3 would be.
Oklahoma State?
No. We're not giving, no. Hell
no.
Well, I mean, if you want to count mythical championships that you paint on your stadium to say you win it, then okay. But aside from that, hell no. They fumble. Listen, they should have had a chance to do something this past season, and we saw how they handled that. So now, in fact, I'm reaching by including Texas just because they're Texas. But my point is, I think in the true, being 100% transparent, there's probably 20 teams, 30 tops a decade. It's probably even a decade you know, where in the 90s and 2000s, Miami's up, but then they're down. Like the last 10 years, Miami isn't anybody's conversation for a natty, right? The last 10 years, USC isn't in anybody's conversation for a natty, right? But obviously those are teams that come and go. Ohio State went through a period where they were just like ho-hum. So OU, obviously in the early 90s, mid 90s, right? So I think the recruiting happens in a space where like you are as good as you are. And if I'm a kid who outside of sports, my grades and my merits say I'm McDonald's, but my brother's grades and merits say he's engineer. Well, that's on my ass to get it in gear to go do what I need to do. I don't want to create kitty gloves that say, but I'm a D1 athlete too. And, you know, whatever the market says you should earn, go do it. If your school's making $20 million over and beyond and they want to have a salary cap or they want to have a profit sharing where 10% goes to the kids and the kids get it based upon whatever, I'm cool with that, because what's the alternative? What you've been getting before, I didn't get paid a dollar. No one, well, football, look, the University of Oklahoma didn't, and by the way, the community, but you got a scholarship. I don't want to hear none of that from none of y'all, because you have no idea what we went through. Like, if you weren't there, shut up.
Ooh.
And I didn't complain. And I went to school and I got a real degree. And I, you know what I'm saying? I took care of business. So the whole, but the scholar that you got me messed up, bro. You would not take a job that gives you room and board and the ability to put maybe get a chance to get a piece of paper in 5 years if you knew they were making $20 million a year off of you. You wouldn't take that. Like, yeah. In a workplace, you wouldn't take the job. So again, that's a whole nother one. DM me, whatever you need to do. We can have a conversation. But I was very grateful for my scholarly. But like I said to you guys before, man, I didn't run it. I got invited to do this web thing, and there were thousands of Sooner fans on that deal. Like, that's how much is the value of that? Yeah. Right? We run a camp. What's the value of 100 kids doing $100? Like, do the math. So, you know, and I kind of went down a rabbit hole there. But Barry, I do believe there is something too. You're as good as you are. Capitalism is real. I believe capitalism works. It's not perfect. But dude, you went to Montana State, bro. Did you expect to get paid what a kid who's going to Oklahoma is going to get? Like, how many natties do you guys have? How many conference championships? How many All-Americans? How many guys in the NFL? How many, right? There's a residual impact of playing for an OU versus playing for a TCU. Just is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, however unfortunate you want to say, or fortunate, I mean, that they're still getting an opportunity. And you know, the one of the other like byproducts of it, I love what the NBA did with allowing guys just to not go to school, because you're also devaluing the education itself when you're taking guys who may want to study engineering, or, and you could probably speak to this as a reality of being a college athlete. Like, there's some courses that you just can't do because the workload, the schedule, whatever it may be. I mean, you saw that come out at what, North Carolina with their basketball team. Everybody was taking the same class and it was just a complete cluster, you know what. And then they weren't getting a value. Those guys weren't getting a valuable, like they were getting a degree, but you wouldn't necessarily say they were able to study what they wanted to study and do what they wanted to do. And it was even more limited than other places, right? And that was probably an extreme. But how often do those extremes show up at different places? I mean, it just is what it is.
I saw guys get pushed through classes to get through eligibility, and we'll figure it out on the back end. By the way, I was one of those kids who was like, no. I need this class for my major. Like, I was one who would advocate for myself. I saw a bunch of guys just, you know, kind of, you know, and like I said, this isn't an indictment. Guys want to play ball. So a lot of guys are like, what do I got to do to stay eligible? right? And yeah. and then obviously back then we had summer school and intermission and those things to make up class. I leveraged the hell out of summer school. I missed out on it my freshman year. I didn't really understand it. The rest of my years at OU, I leveraged it because I knew it was an opportunity for me to get a competitive advantage and take the classes I couldn't take during the season. So yeah, I have buddies at Fresno State who they were just like, bro, they kind of just made our schedule and da 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 da. Like, what? Everybody got a social degree or everybody got, you know, pub, I don't know, yeah. whatever, a degree that means nothing. And so part of that is ownership though, man. I'm not a guy who likes to make excuses. I don't want anyone ever to have the opinion of Mackey was a victim. To me is just a part of my character that I don't like. And at the end of the day, we're adults. And as an adult, man, fight for what you believe in, bro. Like, don't let someone else tell you your truth. Make sure you formulate your own.
You know who is also an adult? Mr. Damian Mackey. Head coach of the University of Oklahoma, Brent Venables. And he has stepped into the helm this year. And in this episode, we're going to talk every week. We've been talking about an aspect of the team, a position group. This week, we're going to talk defense. People want to know. People have witnessed what's gone on the past 10 to 12 years. They have been tired of it. They've grown weary of it. Watch their Sooners have a good stretch of a couple games playing defense, and then third game in, ball goes over a safety's head, guy's gone for a 70-yard touchdown. What the heck happened? Guy's slanting the entire wrong way. Guy's not filling their run fits, just complete misses on the defense. And Brent Venables, who was, as most Sooner fans know, we do have a lot of young Sooner fans, I believe, who listen to this too, who may not, they may have been, you know, 8 or 9 at the time Brent Venables coached his last game at OU. And then the last, I think 2011, I believe, was his last year, if I'm not mistaken. And he had great defenses at OU. There were some years towards the end, right, where you saw the shift. They obviously thought they Coach Stoops obviously felt they needed to do something. And I think if a memory serves right from the kind of scuttlebutt at the time, is that Brent had the opportunity to stay if he wanted to, but chose to go do something else, just seek out some new challenges and opportunities, which worked out better for him. He seemed to be able to hone his skill, hone his craft, learn under someone who was doing things differently, but still building a successful program built around accountability and culture. So the people want to know, what is OU defense this year going to look like?
Hit and hustle. No, in all seriousness, man, I'm excited about seeing guys attack the line of scrimmage, playing with forward lean, pushing the line of scrimmage to the backfield. Listen, the game of football is easy when a quarterback has time. The game of football is difficult when a quarterback doesn't have time, right? Like, that's a pretty simple way to wrap up the game, isn't it?
Yeah, I would totally agree.
We've taken the game, and Mike Stoops, I don't know why, but maybe when BV left, I don't know, but Mike kind of took the defense and played on our side of the line of scrimmage, which gives the offense momentum because they're firing off on us, and that's not BV style. BV,
can I ask you something about that? So if you try, I want to ask you to try and get inside his head about why you would make that shift. What do you know, like, why he would go to that style?
I do. I don't know, but I have my intuition and my thinking and kind of the philosophy behind it. Listen, I had guys playing for Mike years after I played that I spoke to, and his or what I was told, I guess I should say, I don't want to speak for him, because by the way, Mike's a solid dude. I like him. I appreciate everything he did for me. But the I think the philosophy behind that B was the offense will make a mistake, right? So there's this term talking about staying on schedule. And the philosophy is the defense's job is to just get the offense off schedule, right? First and 10 turns to second and 6, turns to third and 3 or third and 2, and it's third and short, and you got options to run or throw, right? Or, you know, first and 10 turns to second and 3, and then you can action them, or the defense has a bevy of options. Mike's philosophy is it's or that philosophy. I don't want to call it Mike's because he didn't say that. But the philosophy behind that is essentially if you force offenses to go make 12, 13, 14, 15 play drives, they're going to get a hold, or there's going to be a drop, or somebody's just going to win and beat their guy and make a sack. And they won't consistently be able to put up points. The problem is football is a lot more mental than people think. And when you think you're good, you're probably a little better than you really are. And when you think you're not good, you're probably a little worse than you really are. And when you think you can't get stops, whether it's 3rd and 1, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 15, I think we've given up 3rd and 18, 19, 20s. Oof. The defense, right? That mental aspect of whatever can go wrong will go wrong. Murphy's Law. It starts to become a part of your identity. And I think over the culmination of 3, 4, 5, 7, 10, 12 seasons, by the way, this is through 4 recruiting cycles, you know, position coaching changes. Like, there isn't a tangible way to justify it, but the intangible eyes watching games year over year, and I'm in California and Sooner fans in Oklahoma are watching with Sooner fans in New England, and on 3rd and 17, we're all 3 saying, oh shoot, we're going to find a way to give this thing up, and they're going to pick it up. And what happens? They pick it up.
They pick it up.
Whether it's the kid from Texas, they throw a quick screen, and I think someone touches him 4 yards up the field, and somehow he runs through freaking 15 tackles. Or maybe it's 3rd and 9, and pre-snap, we line up at 11, and we bail, and we give up a 10-yard out. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, how many different ways have we seen 3rd and long turn into 1st and 10 or even a touchdown? That becomes a part of your identity. You can't tangibly put your finger on it, but we all see it, right? So that's the part of the game where it's bend but don't break, be safe, overly cautious, versus let's just see what happens if we're hell on wheels and we rep the hell out of this and everyone knows where they're supposed to be. And you know what? There's going to be a couple of times where guys make a play, but we trust our safety. He's going to make plays in space, and our corners are not going to trip over their own toe, right? Like, we trust the work we put in. Well, guess what? That becomes your identity. On 3rd and 6, you smack them in the mouth and they get 4 yards, you get off the field. On 3rd and 17, your D-line is, even though you're rushing 3, how many times have you seen a team play us and they only rush 3? But they still get to the quarterback because their identity is 3rd down, we get off the field. Like, that's their identity. You see what I'm saying? And so, since you asked the question, it kind of plays into BV's identity. BV's identity is, we ain't giving you shit. If you take it, respect. But we're not giving you a 7-yard cushion. We're not doing it. Now, maybe on 1st and 10, and we're going to read the angles or whatever, but on 3rd and 6, you're not getting 8 yards. On 3rd and 6, you're not getting 4 yards, right? Unless the numbers say, and obviously down in distance, and we're up by 2 scores, da, 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 whatever. But, like, that's the part where it drove me crazy for the better part of a decade. Like, we're giving them 7 yards on 3rd and 5. And then I'm like, okay, the corners are going to sit in cement, and they're going to take a step up like it's a hard cover 2, you know, like a high school cover 2, old school cover 2.
Yeah.
No, corners are bailing out. What? What are we trying? Who can't throw? What D1 quarterback can't throw a 5-yard out on 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6, and the corner's playing 7 pre-snap and then bailing? Like, that's the easiest throw in football, and it's away from everybody except the receiver. Like, that part, I anticipate heavily that we're not going to consistently see that. And I just think the identity of the team is going to be, we're going to go take it. And that's where OU needs to get back. We need to get back to taking things instead of hoping and hoping someone gives us something.
What schematically, right? So what we saw most recently, Alex Grinch's defense, which, to give the guys his due, in 2019, especially the first half of that season, I think you got the feeling, and you can, you know, correct me or tell me what you think, but I think towards the middle, maybe 2/3 of that season, teams started to get a better feel on what he was doing. And that's when you saw things become a little less successful. Kansas State seemed to really be the team that started to use those the defensive line angling a certain direction, right? Fans saw it. You know that they're frustrated with that. But the guy had a decent defense in 2019. You saw it get worse in the subsequent years. Schematically, what is OU getting back to with BV?
Here's the thing. I don't think we did enough big on the line of scrimmage. Scott, the line of scrimmage is football. Everything else is just, it's like theater. It really is. But football is played at the line of scrimmage. And again, Mike did it a lot. And then I saw, you know, Grinch as well. You can't impose your will when one team has 5 300-pounders protecting a kid whose job is to run the show, and you're trying to thwart that with 3, maybe 3.5, and you're trying to outsmart, you know, you're looking at the analytics too much. You say, oh, they throw it to the flats on second down, we're going to cover the flats. Oh, they throw it to the hole on third and whatever medium, we're going to carry our overhangs are going to carry to cover up the hole. You got to play football. And what the elementary of it, or the foundation of it is if my 4 to 4.5 big guys don't allow the 5 guys whose responsibility it is to protect the showmaker, which is your quarterback, and he's uncomfortable, everything falls apart. Like, if you consolidate football to that, and by the way, I'm a receiver. I wasn't, you know, a diva or anything, but like, I want to look good. I don't want to get dirty. I want to leave the game and take a 2-minute shower and go, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a receiver. I'm not even going to act like I'm not. O-line and D-line, it's a different game, bro. They're going to war. Like, they legit experienced something totally different than we experienced. And I just couldn't imagine 10 years of being a D-lineman knowing that you're playing with one hand tied behind your back, which is what it looked like. And so with BV coming back into the fold, I'm 99.99999% sure his game plan is going to start with our D-line. And whoever's coming off the edge or whatever backers are shooting, I know BV's going to do his dogs. He loves cross dogs and all those deals. He's going to make sure the first thing we do is make the offense uncomfortable. Again, it goes back to why I think the Kansases and TCUs of the world are not going to have games where they can just play with us, because there's just no way a Kansas should play with OU. Granted, they beat Texas. I might bring that up every week.
I think you should.
I might bring that up every week, but that's just not what the caliber of player OU has versus Kansas. That shouldn't happen. And the only reason that happens is because their quarterback's comfortable. And if you go watch the game, we brought some heat and we did some different things, but we gave them a lot. We gave him time in the pocket. We gave him a chance to look at his first read and then his second read and then turn and look on the, you know, the backside check down. Like, he had time. It wasn't like their O-line just kicked our D-line's ass. We're bringing 3, or we're bringing 3.5, or we've got our best rusher dropping into the flats, or we've subbed the whole first team D out and we've got the red shirts in, and it's arbitrary. We don't have any reason. Like, what the hell are we doing? No one knows. I think we're gonna leave that expectation, and BV is going to say, look, guys, look, men, starters are going to play 80%. When you're on the field, you give 100%. When you're tired, you come out, because we got another guy almost as good as you, maybe as good as you, ready to go. And he's going to put in maximum effort. And, you know, our job is to make sure midway through the fourth quarter, the game's already in hand, and you guys can go relax and we can talk about what you guys are going to do after the game. Like, that was our recipe. We wanted the game to already be over. I mean, we never said at halftime, because, you know, people can come back. We wanted the game over midway through the fourth quarter. That's when you can say, okay, I can take my foot off their neck. We're winning 31-3. They've got 3 first downs. Their quarterback's gotten hurt. Their second string guy is running for his life, right? Let's go let the puppies play. Like, that's the mean. How many times have we seen OU do that the last 5 years? It's not very many. Not the big. Last times we saw it quite a bit was when Bob was the head coach and Link was the OC. We saw that happen quite a bit with the Baker Mayfield teams. It didn't even happen. It didn't even happen much with Kyler. And to be honest with you, it didn't happen much Baker senior year. We were a shootout every game.
Every game. It started with Baylor, like that Baylor game, the one where Abdul Adams, shout out Abdul Adams. He follows me on Instagram.
99 hitter, right?
Yeah, man. Dude's fast. I wish that dude the best. Just got done, I guess, at Syracuse. I think I don't remember if he was drafted or whatever. But anyways, besides the point, it started with that game. Like, OU jumped out on them, and they just let, I think the final score was like 49-41. I mean, come on. Like what's going on there? I want to ask you, because you brought up guys going out when they're tired, and this is the obvious question. Let me say, as a trainer, I get the what they're doing with the rotations. So, in the world of performance, especially with the way things are analyzed and hyper scrutinized, there is sort of a formula that says Perrion gives, he can move at this velocity with this power for six plays, right? At around play seven, that fades by 3%. By play eight, fades by another 3%, right? So analytically, you can say it might be better to have so-and-so out on the field instead of Perrion Winfrey now operating at 87%. You being in the game, right, and seeing your Tommy Harris's and your Dusty Dvoracek's and your Kelly Gregg's and guys like that, what is the actual reality of that? Because there's the analytics side that look how fast a guy is moving. You try and, you know, the Thunder used to do this with Westbrook, where fans used to get so upset when they would sit him, but their argument was the amount of steps and work in the game, and that his value went drastically down when he hit a certain work capacity, right? So I get what they were doing, but it frustrated fans. I mean, Mackie, this is probably one of the most complained about aspects of the Grinch Riley system, right? Was the rotations. What's the reality of that, and what will you see with BV's system?
I think Grinch took the analytics to an entirely inappropriate level. I get the West. By the way, I think the Oklahoma City fans are going to feel a certain way about Westbrook, but actually they don't have the same issue with him that they have with KD. So I actually digress. Listen, I don't understand. It's a key drive in the third quarter where you're trying to keep momentum. And it's not a substitution of Perrion because he's tired. It's the entire D-line are essentially out for five plays. I am still waiting to hear the justification behind that. We okayed it against Tulane because I think it was 107 degrees and they were saying, hey, we're trying to flush bodies and we anticipated kicking their ass in the game. Well, I think we're up 19 in the third quarter, 16, three possessions in the third. So maybe the game's over. And then, of course, that identity thing that I just talked about pops its rears its ugly head and they get all these miracle third downs and score. But Grinch he has to apologize to the Sooner Nation. He has to apologize because there are so many games he left meat on the bone and just flat out made, substitution. His substitution patterns are like unlike any substitution pattern I have ever seen outside of Pee Wee football. I have never in my career, by the way, in multiple states, middle school, high school, college, pro, I've never seen a team have a substitution pattern where arbitrarily, you know, here's the part, right? It's football's five plays. It's the third quarter. We're up four. We're trying to stop them from going ahead. It's second down. And on second and seven, you see your best edge defender, your best three technique, your best strong side defensive end going out. And there's three unproven commodities that no one's ever seen coming in. And then they get the first down and then they take the lead. And then we're like, okay, we learned that lesson. And the next game, it's a key possession. Barry, do you want to finish the statement for me? Right? Like, what in the H-E? What are we doing? Right? Okay, maybe they tried it and they thought it, but it failed, crashed, and burned in multiple games. And guess what they did the next game? They did it again. That part is the part where he owes us an apology. I don't give a damn how we ended the year and whatever, right? We had some guys go to the league with shout out to Benito and shout out to Perrion and all those guys who are going to get to play on Sundays. That's just a mess up, bro. Like, you didn't do the best job possible. Like you, in some respects, an incompetent leader trying to set a new precedent or set a new trend, and it didn't work, and you never manned up. Grinch is a guy who would say, hey, I want to man up. He never manned up and explained to us what the hell his thought process was behind that. And as the DC and as Link being his head coach, Link needed to hold him more accountable to that. There needed to be, with the Sooner Nation asking so many questions around that whole scheme or philosophy, no one ever addressed it except to say, we want to make sure our guys are staying hydrated and playing at max performance. Help me understand what that requires all four at once. If you're saying Paranon does six plays at max and then he loses, like just in your example, you said Paranon can do six at max and then seven, he loses three, and then eight, he loses. Well, everybody has different numbers. So it shouldn't just be, okay, play four, everybody's going to come out and then we're going to have wholesale red shirts come in. And essentially doing it, I mean, there's probably four or five games where there's key possessions against rivals even, and we've got the twos and sometimes the threes in. No, hell no. That's ignorance. That's stupidity. And by the way, we're human. No one's perfect. But that was pretty damn dumb for him to do that and to continue to do that, and for Link to allow him to continue to do that. That's dumb. And you know it's dumb because no one else does it. And football is the number one copycat game of all other sports.
Ooh, and it'll be really telling to see if they continue that model in SC, but this is not an SC podcast. Couple
questions. Based on the video I saw, it looks like they're going to be doing square dancing, bro. I'm just saying.
Oh my gosh, man. Ugh. No, I've not seen them do one maximum velocity drill like posted at all. Everything is like, They do a bunch of drills where like, all right, I'm about to run. Just wait, I'm about to run. And they never actually run. It's like, just run at a certain point.
Hip twerk. I'm going to do this weird hip twerk instead.
Yeah. It's like at a certain point, just run. Like the A skips and B skips are awesome. Like it's great. You also need to run. Like real sprints. This is kind of my last thing, and then we'll close the show. Did BV, when he was at Clemson, did you see any of his philosophy change in terms of not necessarily really talking more schematics, maybe culture too, but just what he was doing on the field at OU that maybe caused OU to look a different direction, and then what he was able to do at Clemson? Did you see anything different take time over that 10 years? Obviously some stuff changed because college football changed, but is there anything in particular you can point out, or is it really just a culture solution at OU more so than anything right now?
Well, I'll use BV versus Link just because they are at the same position, but when I was at OU, Coach BV, one, he wanted to operate to our strengths. And then two, he wanted to, you don't want to be a responder. You want to be, you want to generate, you don't want to be the person responding or initiate, right? You want to initiate something, but there's a part of defense where you are reacting. And so BV was a coach that if something wasn't working, he wasn't married to it to a point where he'd say, no, it's the Jimmies and Joes. He'd say, nah, we got to fix the scheme. And so whereas Link would say, my stuff works. Everybody starts going into a shell defense. And all of a sudden, no, bro, your stuff don't work as well as it did prior to. I think Brent Venables, even when I was at OU, we were a hard 4-3 team. And then if you remember BV, before he left, we all of a sudden went to a spinner and Dan Cody standing up. We had a rush in 02-03. Dan Cody's coming off the edge as a stand-up DN, and then of course that's the position. It becomes a spinner position. And then, right, they came from K-State running a true 43. When Roy's freshman year, Roy doesn't start out in the box. Roy is kind of, they're like, yo, is he a backer? No. Well, they adjust, and BV says, yo, Roy is kind of really a quasi everything back. They called it the Roy back position because you're kind of a linebacker, you're kind of a cornerback, you're kind of a safety. I think the safety skill is the one you didn't do because he's always either in the hole or in the flats or busting up a tight end. But that's BV's game. BV is going to take what he has and he's going to max it. He's not going to say, here's my thing, now do it, which I think was more in line with what Link did. And I think Bob, being a great CEO, put Link in position to be successful when Link just worried about offense. And then when Link had to kind of do it on his own, he didn't have that macro lens that Bob had as a CEO. Link just kind of could just do his thing. And you saw every year it digressed. So when I see BV and I saw him run a 34 some at Clemson, and obviously he's a 4-3 guy, just kind of his roots, but he's also been a guy who's been able to modify, be flexible, be multiple. And that's what I anticipate. I anticipate this year, our defense this year, that it does next year based upon personnel. But the roots of his defense are going to be attacking the line of scrimmage and making them play at 11 yards plus versus allowing them to play at 9 yards minus.
I think fans are going to get something different this year, for sure. It'll definitely be different. The physicality will obviously be different. We saw that in the practices just in the spring, just the different level of intensity coming out of the program. So I guess we'll leave it at that. Awesome show. Love the response that we've gotten from everybody. The feedback continues to grow. We have so many people that are reaching out saying, hey, can we do this, do that? Make sure that you go to iTunes, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts, leave a rating and review. Damien, haven't had anybody yet that I'm aware of on the shirts. What's the deal on the shirts? You want to shout that out again?
Yeah, man. What's up? Nobody wants to. No, I guess we're still, you know, we are just chopped liver. Guys, I first things first, road to 5,000. Shout out to you guys. We doubled our followership the last 7 days. That's pretty freaking sweet. Barry was letting me know, man, we get to 300 to 500 followers. We'll start doing live. Imagine us doing a live with a Mark Clayton and you guys can do some Q&A. I'm all in on that, but we want to keep growing the platform on IG. But man, I want a shirt. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm lame for thinking so, or maybe a tank top or something, but I'd love to have a Barry and Mac show shirt that we can have available as merch for our listeners. And by the way, shout out to all you guys that are downloading this thing, guys. We super appreciate you guys. You guys are doing a fantastic job. Over 3,000 downloads the first 9 days is ridiculous. Yeah. But hey, somebody reach out, man. Let's develop a business relationship. I'm all about entrepreneurship. Barry's all about entrepreneurship. I'm a big time entrepreneur. I will never work for another person again. I believe in, making your worth. And I think that there's, you know, I think there could be something there. I think there could be something there.
Man, I want a shirt before I'm about to take some much needed vacation R&R time for myself. I would love a shirt by the time I take my Western Caribbean trip in like 9 days. If somebody made that happen and like overnighted something, oh my goodness, that would be the most exciting thing. If I was wearing a Barry and Mac podcast shirt in Cozumel, oh my goodness, how awesome would that be? That would be beautiful. So let's make that happen, people.
Do it. Guys, I appreciate you guys. You guys have been phenomenal. Continue to ride this ride with us. Let's enjoy this journey and let's keep the OU football conversation cooking.